build a staircase kind of thing. It'll take a little time because we've got to get permits to do it. But,
call them up. Call them in a while. Wie heißt der? Wie heißt der?
Arje Leipziger.
Wie ist der letzte Name?
Krieger.
Krieger. Nicht gewusst. Okay. Mr. Klicker has yahrzeit for his father, so we dedicate the learning L'zecha Nishmas Rabbi Chiel Meir B'Reb Tzvi Hirsch. I thought maybe we're starting a new month, so maybe we should start from the beginning of a new perek. We'll start the fifth perek on Daf Nun Beis on Beis. We already covered some of these dinim. The Mishnah, the perek is discussing the din of Tchum Shabbos. So let's say if a person, the din of Tchum Shabbos, we know a person is not permitted to go chutz l'tchum, not permitted to walk too far away from his home. And this is a machlokes satanoim, whether the din of Tchum Shabbos is a din deraisa, a din derabbanan. The Gemara, in different places, refers to Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that the Tchum of Alpay Mamo, that's one mil, Tchum of Alpay Mamo is a din deraisa. And the Gemara says nobody agrees with Rabbi Akiva, and we don't accept that opinion. Thank you very much. We paskan that that Tchum of one mil, Alpay Mamo, is only derabbanan. And then the Rif, we learned already, the Rif in the end of the first parak quoted the Talmud Yerushalmi, and the Rambam quotes this, that that's only Tchumin of one mil. What about Tchumin of Yud Beis mil? So that's already an Isur Deraisa. And the Mechaber Paskins like this, Rabbi Yosef Kar Paskins for the Svardim, like the Rif and the Rambam, based on the passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi, that the fact that you're not allowed to go, Chutz L'Tchum, Yud Beis mil, that'll be an Isur Deraisa. And the Ramah Paskins like the Balei HaTesvis, who usually ignore Yerushalmis. Either they didn't have Yerushalmis, or once in a while they had a Talmud Yerushalmi, but they say the Bavli doesn't say such a thing. Whenever there's a conflict between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, we always follow the Bavli. That's a Pella and the Rif. Why should the Rif follow the Yerushalmi over here, the Rif and the Rambam? The Rif himself has that club. When we learned the end of Erevin, so the Rif in the last parak in Erevin made a big fuss about this. Whenever there's a conflict between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, we always follow the Bavli against the Yerushalmi. Because the Bavli was written later, that we know is true. The Bavli, Yerushalmi, was written by the students of Rabbi Yechon, or Rabbi Yechon was the first generation of Amoraim. The Bavli was written several generations later. That's a fact. So then the Rif adds on another point that's questionable, and he writes the authors of the Talmud Bavli were aware of everything that it says in the Talmud Yerushalmi, so if they write Fakir, it means that they took it into consideration and they paskened against it. In Hilchas of Kibasroi, whenever there's a machlokes between the earlier Rabbanim and the later Rabbanim, the later Rabbanim had access to what the earlier Rabbanim said and they took it into consideration and they paskened against it, so we paskened Hilchas of Kibasroi.
But they weren't this great.
That's a good question. Okay, that's a good question. So this is a problem. This is a steer in the Rif. There are a lot of steerers. This is a steer in the Rif. I mean, a lot of steerers on this issue. A lot of steerers. The Rif says that we always pass on like the Bavli against the Yerushalmi, and then Rav Gorin put out a whole volume where he collected the Vilna Gaon many times has Shverer Rambams, and the Lechem Mishnah, and the Mefarshim on the side of the Rambam. They stand on the head to try to figure out how did the Rambam pass on like this? Where does it come from? Isn't it against the Gemara? So they give Shvera to Rutzim, and the Vilna Gaon always says the same parrot, that the Rambam often paskins like the Yerushalmi kineged HaBavli. So how could that be? But the Rif postulated this klal in the last parrot, and here the Rif contradicts himself. Here the Rif in the first parrot paskins like the Yerushalmi about the Yud Beis. Okay, so that's a problem. How do you paskin? That's a problem. So there is a din of Tchumin. You're not allowed to go chutz l'tchum. Halacha l'maisa, bottom line, you're not allowed to go outside of Alpay Mama, one mil. We paskin it's only mid the Rabbonim, it's only mid the Rabbonim. You're not permitted to go more than Alpay Mama away from where you live. So let's say a person lives in the middle of a desert. He has a house in the middle of the desert, so he has to draw a circle and he can't go. Chutz l'Alpay Mama. What if he lives in the middle of a city? So then you don't just draw a circle around his house. The city, let's say, is amoeba shape. The city. The square, that's what we're going to get to. The Mishnah says if it's a city, then you make it into a rectangle. That's what we're going to learn in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says if you live in the middle of a city, so you don't just draw a pi mama around your house, you don't just draw a circle. First you establish that the city is a rectangle shape. But the city is Nishkin rectangle, the city is a circle, or the city is an oval, or the city is a sloppy mess, whatever.
Amorphous.
So we amorphous. So the Mishnah says, no, you make it into a rectangle. So if it's like Manhattan Island, that's approximately, it came out the rectangle the way it is. So you just finish out the rectangle to make it a full rectangle, and then you have Alpai Mama outside of that. But if the city is not practically a rectangular shape, amorphous, or circular, oval, whatever, so then this Mishnah says, you take the northernmost house in the city, and you draw a line. The city, all cities Alpidin are considered rectangular shapes. If it's practically a rectangle the way it is, they just fill in the rectangle and finish. If it's not, it doesn't look like any shape, then you take the northernmost house and you draw a straight line
east
to west. Then you take the easternmost house, then the westernmost house, and the southernmost house. You make it into a rectangle. And then you draw another rectangle outside of that, Alpai Mama outside of that. So that's the first Mishnah. So the Mishnah talk, that's called La'aber es ha'ir. What does the word mean? Ketzad ma'abrim es ha'orim. How do you translate the verb? La'aber. It's a new verb. So the Gemara has two ways to read the Mishnah. Whether the word is spelled with an ayin, like an isha mu'uberes, like a shana mu'uberes, a pregnant woman has a baby inside. The shana mu'uberes has an extra month. So an ir ha'mu'uberes means the city is protruding like a pregnant woman has an extra area there. So if you have a house that's sticking out to the east or a house that's sticking out to the west, you don't draw the border that it's straight and that it protrudes and it goes back in. You extend the whole city limits and you draw one line to make the whole city as a rectangular shape. That's one version the Gemara has. La'abera so'ir means they took a noun and they made it, the Tanoi made it into a verb. So they took Isham Uberes and Uber and made it into a verb to make the city pregnant. The other reading of the Mishnah is La'aber with an Aleph. By us, we don't know how to pronounce Hebrew well, so we pronounce Aleph and Ayin the same thing. If you meet some real Svardim, so they'll pronounce it differently. So in the days of the Tanaim, they had different people who were pronouncing, they used to recite the Mishnahs orally. Until later on, when they had the Hetzer to write it down, the Gemara records in Temura, beginning of the second parak in Temura, they reached the point, it's assumed that Rabbi Yudah Nasi edited the Mishnahs, most assumed that the Mishnahs were still being recited orally. He edited not the way we edit a book. It still wasn't written down. It was only written down, that's how most of the historians assume, and most of the Achrayim assume like this. Machlekes, the historians of Machlekes Achrayim. So most assume that the Mishnahs wasn't written down until the days of Ravina Rabashi. And the Gemara says they were afraid that the whole Torah Shebaal Peh is going to be forgotten. True, you're not allowed to write down Torah Shebaal Peh, but if you're concerned everything is going to be lost, so it's better to violate this, better to write it down, than to lose part of the Torah Shebaal Peh. So there were two groups of people pronouncing the Mishnah over here. Some were pronouncing, because they didn't have it biksav in the earlier, so some of people were pronouncing it like an ayin, and others were pronouncing it like an aleph. And the Gemara says that's the first piece of Gemara, that Rav Shmuel, first piece of Gemara, Nun Gimla Man Aleph, the third line from the top, fourth line from the top, Rav Shmuel had a dispute. Chad Tani, one of them, pronounced the Mishnah. Rav Shmuel were both students of Rabbi Yudah Nasi. So they both heard Rabbi Yudah Nasi pronounce the Mishnah. They studied by him. So one of them said, Chad Tani Ma'abrim, with an ayin. The Chad Tani Ma'abrim, with an aleph. Manda Tani Ma'avrin, with an aleph, it's Miloshin Aver, a limb. You're extending the city by adding on a limb to the side. The city really, basically, is rectangular shape. Then you have a house protruding, so you move over the border, and it's even a bigger rectangle. And the other one has the girsa. Mandatani me'avrin as an aleph is miloshen aver. Mandatani me'abrim ki isha ubra, like an isha mu'beris. So that's what the Mishnah says. Ketzim abrim esarim, how do you extend the city limits? If you have a bayis nichnas, bayis yotze. Here you have a house that's closer into the city, and then afterward you have a house that's further out, zigzag. The houses are not straight. Or you have pogum nichnas, pogum yotze. Rashi says that pogrom means if you have a castle, a building, you have a building that's closer to the center of the city, on the edge of the city, then you have another building that's further out. Why is it called a pogrom? Because instead of having a straight line for the city limit, you have pegimus. Pegimus means there are notches. It goes in, it goes out, goes in, it goes out, zigzag. So they refer to those houses as a pogrom. Or you have gdudios, givohos, asora, tvochim. Or you have, let's say, the Mefarshim explain, Rashi explains, you have, let's say, an old house that fell apart, and you have three walls left. So if you have three walls left, even if you don't have a roof, someone may want to live there. Someone may be able to live there. Let's say you only have two walls left, two walls at a right angle to each other, but you have a roof. No, so you have two walls and a roof, so someone can live there also. So even though the mice and nobody's living there, let's say that all the houses of the city are all together, then you have a house that's protruding. So if the house is a place where people really live, or you have a shop where people do business over there, so that extends the city limits. What if the house that's extending the city limit, nobody lives there anymore, the whole house collapses, the whole thing collapses, there's nothing there. But if it collapses, but there's still something left that you can live in, either you have three walls without a roof, or you have two walls with a roof, so then it's a shtickle house, so then that's also enough to extend the city limits. So the Mishnah says, it has to be 10 tefachim tall, less than 10 tefachim tall is very low. It would be very uncomfortable to sit there. But the din is that one is chayiv and mezuzah. If you have a room that you have to crawl into, if the room is 10 tefachim tall, so it's chayiv and mezuzah. It's a very uncomfortable room to live in. So since theoretically someone can sleep there, or a child can play there, so that's also considered a beis dira. Or if you have gishorim, if you have bridges, let's say you have, like we have sometimes in the middle of the city, you have a bridge that goes over from one side of the street from hospitals, they have a bridge that goes from one side to the other. So if you have such a bridge where people can do some hishtamshes there in the bridge. So usually if you have a bridge, so you have two buildings on either side. Let's say one of the buildings is no longer used, most of the building collapsed, but enough of the building is still left behind to hold up the bridge, and the bridge still has hishtamshes over there. Also, if you have a tunnel under the ground also, if people, that's what someone pointed out, that some Talmid Chacham from Muncie wrote a whole tshuva that you can walk from Washington Heights all the way deep into New Jersey because everything is Teich HaTchum, because there are tunnels under the ground where they have shops. They have shops in the tunnels, not on this side, on the other side, and you can go in the tunnels, so that extends the city limits of New York. I was never there in the tunnels. I got to take a look. I don't know. They have, but the din is, let's say you have, how close do the buildings have to be? Let's say you have a house in New York and a house in Los Angeles. And you're going to say the whole United States is one big city. That's a little ridiculous. So how close do the homes have to be to each other? So the Mishnah is going to say, later Mishnah is going to say, it has to be within 70 amas to each other. Where'd they get the shir shivim amas v'shirayim? 70 amas plus change. 70 amas and 2/3 of an amma. So the Gemara establishes this din based on a pasuk. The Pashta says that when we look at that pasuk and the drush of the Gemara, it sounds like absolutely like an asmachta. But Taisus says that it's a real drush of Gemara derai. So the pasuk says that when Moshe Rabbeinu made the Mishkan, so the Chatzah HaMishkan was 100 amas long and 50 amas wide. And then it says it was 100 amas long, and how wide was it? Verochav, how wide? Chamishim b'chamishim. What do you mean chamishim b'chamishim? It wasn't 50 by 50. It was 50 by 100. So why does it say Berochav and the width was Chamishim Chamishim? So the Pashup Shat, Rashi writes on Chumash, Pashup Shat is that the first Chamishim Chamishim, it was 100 amas long and 50 amas wide. The first 50 by 50, there was nothing there. And it was empty. And the second 50 by 50, that's where the whole Mishkan was. The Mishkan began in the second half of the Chatzah. The first half was empty. There were no Kelim over there. That's the simple Shat. Berochav really means the width of the chatzah was chamishim amo, but the front chamishim was empty. There was no mishkan. Then the Gemara has another drasha, and this is the one that absolutely sounds like an asmachta. And Taisa says no, that it's a real din derais. Chamishim chamishim means a square, 50 by 50. So the pasuk means to tell us take the chatzah hamishkan, which is 100 by 50, and make it into a square. So if you have 100 by 50? 100 by 50 is how much? 5,000 square amas. So what's the square root of 5,000? That's going to be 70 and 2 thirds. So where does it, that's where this comes from. 70 and 2 thirds is square root of 5,000. Take the Chatzah HaMishkan, which is 100 by 50, and make it in, who's making it into a square? For calculation purposes, not make it really into a square. For calculation purposes, imagine, visualize as if the Chatzah HaMishkan would have been a square, and if it would have been a square, it would have been 70 and 2 thirds. And there you have it. There you have what? Well, what has got to do with anything? It's talking about making a Mishkan. So Taisa says, no, that's a drasha gemura deraisa, because it cannot be that you say there's a house in New York and a house in Alaska, and it's all on the same continent, and it's mitzaref yachad. So obviously the houses have to be within a certain proximity to each other. If they're too far apart from each other, it's not mitzaref yachad. The same thing, there's a Mishnah later on Nun Tesam et Aleph. This Mishnah appears in Erechin also. What's the definition of a city? The whole parak is going to talk about that. How do you define a city? So the Mishnah says, Rab Shibin Aimer, the last line in the Mishnah, on Nun Tesam and Aleph, there's a din when you make an Erev in the city, so everyone is allowed to carry, so we're afraid that people are going to forget that there's a malacha of carrying on Shabbos. A lot of people who come from Eretz Yisrael come to America, so they're so used to carrying in Eretz Yisrael. Almost every city has an Erev. So they don't even think. So they think you're allowed to carry. They forgot that there's a whole malacha of carrying. So the Mishnah says, in order to, people shouldn't make such a mistake. So when you make an Erev in the city, you have to leave out a certain section of the city. So everyone should know that there's an Erev. You're only allowed to carry up until here and not further. So the Rishonim say, the Tshuvas Haran is quoted in Shulchan Aruch. That's how we pass kol halacha. Let's say there's a Jewish section of the city, and the Jews never walk in the non-Jewish section of the city anyway. So may as well leave out the non-Jewish section of the city. What good is it? The whole purpose of leaving out, everyone should remember. So you defeated the whole purpose. And nonetheless, that's what they make on the Shulchan Aruch. That if the whole Jewish section, where all the Jews live, that's all included in the air. And you're leaving out a big section of the city, but the Jews never walk there all week long. The 6 days of the week, they don't go there anyway. They don't have any shaykhs over there. So we pass on the Shulchan Aruch, that's good enough. So how large an area do you have to leave out? So the Mishnah says, Reb Shimon says, you have to leave out Gimel Chatzeres al Shnei Batim. You have to leave out a shear of a whole city. That's the minimum size of a city. There's a Mishnah in Erechin, when the Mishnah talks about it also. If you sell a bayis, ayores hamakafas chom, moser shur benun, have a special status in Eretz Yisrael. So if you sell a house, but the ori chayma, you sell a house in an ear hamakafas chom, and moser shur benun, so you can only be paid to the house, yomim tiyagulos, you can only buy, can only force the one who bought it from you to sell it back to you within the first year. After the first year is up, you can't force him to sell it back. If he'll be nice enough to sell it back, that'll be very nice. But if he doesn't want to sell it back, you can't force him to. So the Mishnah says, not stam. Let's say there's a wall around an area in Eretz Yisrael. The wall is there from the days of Yishev Benun, and I have a field. You have a field, you don't have this din. The din only is bias, but the Ari Chayma. If you sold a house in an ear, Hamakef is Chayma. So what's the definition of an ear? Not stama, an area that's surrounded with a wall. So the Mishnah says the same definition is over here. You have to have Gimel Chatzeres, and each Chatzer has to have Shnei Batim. So how close to each other do the Chatzeres have to be? That's over there in Erechin is talking, you have three Chatzeres, but you have a big wall around the whole location. So the wall is Mitzarev everything together, so the Chatzeres don't have to be contiguous to each other. What's over here in Hilchas Shabbos? We're not talking about an ear, Hamakef Hashem, just talking about an ear. So if you have three chatzeres that are near each other, and each chatzer has a minimum of two batim, that's a definition of an ear, and then you can go not only alpai mam away from your house, you draw the whole city as if it's a rectangular shape, and then you have way more area to walk. So how close do the chatzeres have to be? So Tosfos says, not mistaber, to say that the chatzeres have to be contiguous, they have to be touching each other. No. So how close do they have to be? So if you have a wall around it, so the wall is mitzaref, everything inside the wall is one big rishus hayachid, so the wall is mitzaref, all the three chatzeres to each other. What if you don't have a wall and they're not contiguous? The Tosfos says they think the shear, there must be some shear. What are you going to say? Gimel Tvachim, Lavud. That's ridiculous. If you have to, Dalet Amos, Mehecha Tesa, why should it be Dalet Amos? Tosfos says, oh, the shear is Shivim Amma Vishirai. That's a shear derais. Shivim Amma Vishirai. The Chazon Ish writes, the Shivim Amma Vishirai is relevant for a minyan. Let's say if you have 10 people in a room, so the fact that there's a wall around the room is mitzar for all the 10 people together. We had a Gemara in Erevin. I think we learned it 2 years ago. Gemara in Erevin says, let's say, in a Beis Ovel, you have this a lot of times. You have 10 people. Let's say you have 19 people. So you have, let's say you have 18 people in a Beis Ovel. 9 people in one room, 9 people in the other room. So you have more than a minyan. So the Gemara says you have to have 10 people in the same room. If you have 9 people in one room, 9 people in the other room, you don't have a minyan. A lot of times in the shtiblach, a lot of times in shuls, some of the people like to daven in the women's section. Instead of davening when there are no women there, they're in the middle of the week, so they daven in the women's section. So if you have mamish, a wall, here you have a partition that's portable. It's not attached to the ground. So even if you have, let's say, will daven ma'ariv, so you'll have 9 people on one side and one person on the other side, they'll be mitztarf yachad. That's not a mechitza to be mavdal between the one person and 9 people, because it's not attached to the floor. But what happens if you have a mechitza that's attached to the floor? The mechitza is 10 tefachim tall. So if you have 9 people on one side and 9 people on the other side, you don't have a minyan. But let's say you have 100 people on one side and one person on the other side, and he wants to say Kaddish. The one person on the other side wants to say Kaddish. He has to have a minyan on the side where he is. It doesn't help that there's a minyan in the shul. If there's a minyan in the shul and they're saying Kaddish, he can answer. If they're saying Kiddush, he can answer. He can answer even if he's outside. But if he wants to say Kaddish, he has to have 10 people where he is. So the...
doesn't help if you open up the curtains? Let's say he's in the back and you open up the curtains. That doesn't help?
The Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rashbon and Tshuva, who raised the possibility that maybe if they can see each other, maybe it's good. But they really reject that. They say that it's not right to be mekel. The Mishnah in Brocha says like that, by benching mezumen, that if you have some people in one room, some people in another room, 10. You want to be mitzarif to 10. Miktsosim roi me'elu eselu. Some of these people see some of the other people. So then they're mitzarif to bench mezumen ba'asara. So the Rishonim say that's a din by benching mezumen. By benching mezumen, it's not considered a davish abigdusha. It's not really a din of a minion. It's a different halach. It's not identical with this thing. When you're talking about a minyan to recite Chazaras Hashatz or Dovish Abigdusha, they say you have to have 10 people in the same room. So if you have, let's say, 10 people in one room, even if it's a gigantic Madison Square Garden, a gigantic room, and they're far apart from each other, each one is a mile apart from the other, but the room is mitzar for everybody together. What if the people are on a soda? They're on a farm, and there are no walls around it. Let's say soldiers on an army base, and they're all scattered about all over the place, very far from each other. So how close do they have to be to each other? Let's say they can scream and they'll hear each other. They have a loudspeaker, let's say, so they can hear each other. So how close do the soldiers, how close do the people have to be to each other that they should be mitztarif to constitute a minyan? So the Chazon Ish writes this chiddush, they have to be within shivim amah v'shiraim to each other. I always thought that this shir Taisus said that it's a din deraisa, so we'll suffer with Taisus. Okay, they have no brera. Taisus proves it from the Gemara. It has to be a din deraisa. So I always thought Taisus is saying it's a din deraisa in locations. You have a house and a chotzer and a mavui. So the buildings have to be within 70 amas to each other. But people standing, I thought, what do you mean? Tzarf, people within 70 amas. So the Chazon Ish writes a davar pashut. He doesn't even think that it's a chiddush. He says in order to be mitzarf 10 people to a minyan, number 2 has to be within 70 amas to number 1. Number 3 has to be within 70 amas to number 2. Like the houses of a city, or like the 3 chatzeres of a city. They have to be within 70 amas, 70 and 2/3 amas to each other. Not to be mitztaref yachad.
Locational contiguity.
Yeah.
People, the houses, the same place.
I didn't think it was the same. I thought houses I can suffer along. That's what it says. I thought it goes on things that are attached to the ground. Maps, yeah. But down people who are walking around.
Don't they have close enough to hear the children? Far away.
Let's say they have a loudspeaker. Okay.
People could be within, and then they can move out.
Yep. So the minute they walk out of the 70 amas, you lost your minion. You lost your minion. That's a chiddush.
But if there's someone in the woman section on top, one person, 9 downstairs, can't be in
Sarif? It's a different room, right? It's a different room.
It's all in one.
The women are seeing
even if it's on the same ground level. Even if it's on the same ground level, but you have a mechitza, let's say a mechitza like this that's attached to the floor. So then you can't be mitzaris. Even 9 on one side, 9 on the other side, you can't be mitzaris.
So the women in the women's section, how can they take kedusha?
Oh, so that's what we had. The Taisa said, if you have 10 people in the shul, then you don't need 10 people where you are to answer kedusha. The chazan with the 9 people have to be in one location. Then whoever is wherever can answer kedusha. That's what Gemara has a lashon. Afila mechitza shal barzalein emasek is ben yisrael avim shabashemayim. So what does it mean? You can have 5 people here, 5 people there, and a wall in between. Tais says, no. If you have a wall in between, you don't have a minyan. If you have 10 people in the shul, and there's a mechitza shel barzel, there's an iron curtain, and there's somebody outside of the shul, he can answer kadosh kedusha and baruch. Mechitza shel barzel leinim apsekes, that you can answer kedusha, but not that you can be mitzaref to the minyan. To be mitzaref, they have to be all together.
If someone was behind that wall, would not be considered part of the minyan? Say, David Davis from Esrei, behind that wall.
That's a question. What if you have 10 people in the shul? Let's say it's very crowded in the shul, in the Beis Medrash, and then people are coming. Do they have to squeeze into the shul to be considered tefillah b'tzibur? Or they say, no, since you have 10 people in the shul, and the people outside can answer Kaddish Kedusha Baruch Hu, so even those that daven outside are also considered as tefillah b'tzibur. So remember, they asked this to Rav Soloveitchik once, because we used to daven in room 301 in first tall. It's a tiny Beis Medrash there. So when everybody ran into the Beis Medrash was all packed already. And who wanted to squeeze in like sardines? It's more people squeezing in. So the people used to daven in the hallway. So they asked Rav Soloveitchik, is there a mylan squeezing in more into the shul? No one will be able to breathe there. So he thought for a moment or two, then he thought that it is called tefillah b'tzibur. That's how the Aruch HaShulchan writes also. If you have 10 people in the shul, so just like the people outside can answer the Dvarim Shebikdusha, so the people outside, if they're davening along, is considered tefillah b'tzibur also. Yeah, but if the guy outside wants to say Kaddish, he has to make sure he has 10 people outside. It doesn't help that the 10 people, he can answer Kaddish or Kedusha, but he can't be the Chazan, he can't say the Kaddish. See, this is the problem that the Maharsham raises on this din. The definition of an ear is you have to have Gimel Chatzeris, and each Chatzer is an area that's enclosed, and each Chatzer has to have a minimum of 2 Batim. Why is it not called a chatzer? It's just called a bayis. So you have to have a minimum of 3 chatzeres. They don't have to be contiguous to each other. They don't have to be bordering on each other. They have to be within 70 amas of each other. And then there's a gemara in Sanhedrin in the first parak where there's a machlokes hatanaim. What is the minimum population that you need that it should be considered a city? L'may nafkemina, there's a din avir nidachas, that if an individual person worships Avodah Zarah, so he's punished with the skila, but you don't destroy his property. If you have an Iur Nidachas where the majority of the population of the city worshiped Avodah Zarah, so all those who worshiped Avodah Zarah, instead of getting skila, they're punished with sayef, which is a lower punishment. But on the other hand, Mamona Mavad, you burn the houses. You even burn down the houses of the tzaddikim who live in the city. So the Gemara says, it's only if it has the status of a city. So what's the definition of a city? So our Mishnah gives you one definition. Our Mishnah says you have to have 3 chatzeres, minimum of 3 chatzeres, and the Tosafot says you have to be within 70 amas to each other. Each chos has to have a minimum of 2 bat. Then the Gemara there says, what's the minimum population that you have to have in the city? So it's a machlekes hatanayim, so we paskin 100 people. If you have less than 100, it's not called a city. What do you mean? Let's say you have a location, you have 100 people, but it's only motels. Nobody stays there for more than a week. So the Mishnah Berurah said that's not called a city. You have an area that's only motels. So you have 300 people, but everyone only stays for a few days and they leave. So you have to have a minimum population of 100 people who live there for a significant amount of time. Bar says a significant amount of time. So that locharish should depend. The Gemara says in Bava Basra and in the end of Sanhedrin that there are some dinim that depend on living there for 30 days and some dinim that depend on living there for 12 months. So lochar Rabbi Hi should say you have to have a minimum population of 100 people either living there for 30 days or living there for 12 months, one or the other. Just the Mishnah Berurah says they should live there for half a year. He's quoting earlier person, where'd they get to shear half a year? That you never find in the Gemara a shear of living in a place for half a year. Living 30 days he called Yoshve Iram, and living there for 12 months is called Bnei Ho'ir. If you live there for 30 days is Yoshve Ho'ir, live there for 12 months is B'nai Ha'ir. Where is the Rishiyah 6 months? We don't know exactly. So the question is, how do these two jive together? That Gemara by Irani Dachas, that the Gemara says you have to have a minimum population of 100, the Gemara is only talking about Irani Dachas, but the Rishonim extended it, that's the definition of Yir and Kala Tarakula. The Ravid, in his commentary on the side of the Rambam in Hilchas Purim, writes, the people who live, the Bnei HaKfarim, the people who live in the farms, they have a kula, Bizman Baishen, they had a kula, they could read the Megillah the Monday or Thursday before Purim. But the people who live in the cities have to read the Megillah either on the 14th or the 15th, depending whether they're Ayaris HaMakavus Chemos or Shobenun or not. So what's the definition of a kfar, and what's the definition of an ear? What's the definition? So the Ravid says, 100 population, as it says by Irani Dachas. So the Ravid writes in Hilchas Purim that this minimum population of 100 people, it's not only a local din in Hilchas Irani Dachas. It's a din of Kala Terkula. Whenever you're talking about the definition of a city, you have to have a minimum population of 100. So the Shad is over here. So you probably have to put this all together. In order to be considered a city, you have to have a minimum of 3 chatzeres, which are near each other. Each chatzer has to have 2 batim. Then you have to have a minimum population living there for a significant amount of time. The Mishnah Berurah quotes Poskim, the 100 people have to be live there kavua for 6 months, a season. Apparently in the days of the Chofetz Chaim, people wouldn't rent for less than 6 months. So if you rent for half a year, that's called living there for a season. A half a year. So it's a difficult shiur.
100
yeah. Yeah, I think children also included, yeah. So the Pashtus says that you need all of these conditions together. You need 3 chatzeres near each other. Each chatzer should have 2 batim, and plus, you should have a minimum population of 100 people who live there 6 months, or 12 months, or 30 days, whatever you're going to say. I don't think they necessarily have to be Jews. I would assume that non-Jews also count. In order to be considered a city.
How do you come up with the number 100?
No drushes. I mean, Irani Dachas, where they get it from. No drushes. Machlekes Satanoim. Probably Svar. So he paskens a minimum of 100 people. I don't know. So the Marsham raises the following question. When we started the Masechta Erevin, it's on the first daf, we learned that if you have 3 walls in a U shape, so Minatari you're allowed to carry. And with the Rabbanon, it's required to make a tikkun on the Ruch Viz. You have to do something on the 4th wall. But Minatar, it's enough if you have 3 walls. So the Mishnah distinguished between a mavui and a chotzer. If the U-shaped 3 walls is a mavui, so then it's more lenient. So you can put either a lechi or a korah on the 4th wall. But if the area that's enclosed by the 3 walls is a chotzer, it's not a mavui, then we're more strict. And we wouldn't permit carrying just with a lechi or a kor. A kor means you just put a beam. Let's say you have the U-shaped area. Just put a beam from the top of, at the opening where the 4th side is missing. You just put a beam on top from one wall to the other. That's a korah. And a lechi means you just put one beam standing up vertically on one side. So that's if it's a mavui. So we allow carrying based on either a lechi or a korah to serve as a tikkun on the Ruch Reviz. And if it's a chatzer, we can't rely on korah, we can't rely on lechi. We would need 2 lechis, one lechi on one side, one lechi on the other side. Or if the gap is more than 10 amos, the opening is more than 18 feet, it's 10 amos, then you have to have a tzuris ha-pesach. Fine. So the shaila is bizman hazeh. What's a definition of a mavui? A mavui means an area that's enclosed, that has a minimum of 2 chatzeres opening up into it. Each chatzer has to have a minimum of 2 batim opening into it. And a mavi means an area that has 2 chatzeres opening up into it. So do you have these kulas bizmanas that also? That if you have a mavui that has 3 walls, you can rely on a lechi or a korah on the 4th side, the first Mishnah in Erevin. Does it still apply bizmanas that? So the Ramon Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Trumas Adesh, and he's from the early Achrayim, he quotes from the late Rishonim, that the whole din doesn't apply bismanazeh, because ein lo din mavui bismanazeh. We don't have this kula. Why don't we have a din of mavui? Because in order to be considered a mavui means an area that's enclosed with a mechitza. You have to have a minimum of two chatzeres opening a mitzvah. He says, we don't have a din chatzer bizman hazeh. Since we don't have a din chatzer, that's why we don't have a din mavoi. Why don't you have a din chatzer? Because a chatzer haste, I live in my house, you live in your house, and there's a wall around it, and we use the area that we share in common for hishtamshus. We sometimes have a picnic, we do our work there, we read, we sunbathe, we do all kinds of things. So the Rishonim say that today everybody stays in their own home and they don't really use the shared area that they share in common, they don't really use it for private purposes. Let's say you have an apartment building. So who uses the hallway for personal purposes? You never use it. Well, you just carry your luggage. You go shopping, carry your packages. You stop and you open up the key to your door, and then you take all of your luggage and you take all of your packages into your apartment. You don't have any picnics in the hall. The children don't do the homework there. Once a year, when the balabasta cleaned the whole house for Pesach, so she doesn't let the children eat chametz in the house, so they eat the pizza in the hallways. So that's the meaning in some places. They eat the pizza in the hallways because the mother doesn't let them eat any chametz in the house because she got rid of chametz. But you don't use the hallways for any hishtamshus. So that's what the Ramah in Hilchas Erevin quotes from the Trumas Hadesh and from the later Rishonim, that Ein lana din mavoi bizman hazeh, you don't have the kula of lechi or korah from the opening Mishnah, because in order to be considered a mavoi, you have to have two chatzeres opening up, and the chatzer means you use it for private hishtamshus. Ein lana din chatzer bizman hazeh. So if ain lana din chatzer bizman hazeh, ain lana din ir? Because the Mishnah says the definition of an ir is gimel chatzeres. So shnei batim, so you tell me there's no din chatzer, so there's no din ir? So you live in the middle of Queens and I live in the middle of Manhattan. You only have Alpai Mama around your house. You can't go to the end of Manhattan. You can't go to the end of Queens and then walk another Alpai Mama. You only have Alpai Mama. It's like you live in a desert all by himself. There's no dinir bizman hazeh. So the Marsham comes to save the world. He says, everybody walks. Everybody walks to the end of the city. Then you walk Alpai Mama. So why? So he says, no. These two gemaras are not to be combined together. Not that you need gimel chatzeres with shnei batim plus a minimum population of 100. It's either or. Either you have gimel chatzeres with shnei batim each, or you have a minimum population. So true, the gimel chatzeres we are unable to have because ein lana din chatzer bizman hazeh. That's what the Shulchan Aruch assumes. But the 100 population you can have. The pashtus is not like the Masham. The pashtus is you need everything together. You need all the conditions together. You need the gimel chatzeres with the 100 population. So it's taka problem. How do you have a din ir? Unless you say the definition of ir for the purpose of trumen is not the same definition in the other areas of halacha. It's very shver. The pashtus is the Mishnah used the exact same lotion. Gimel chatzeres shel shnei batim.
You mean that the dormitories save everybody?
Yeah, dormitories. In apartment buildings, people hardly use the hallways. In dormitories, they take a shower and they walk in the hallways with their underwear, or they walk with their towels, and they do homework, and they kibitz, and they dance, and they sing, they do all kinds of wild things. Yeah, if you have a dormitory like that. So that's taka chatzer. Okay. Yeah. But you have to have gimel chatzeres that are near each other. You have to have gimel chatzeres that are within 70 amas to each other. So let's say the dormitory has three floors. Is that acceptable? So I would think that not. There's a gemara in the dorm that's talking about other dinim. The gemara says you only count what's on the ground level. I would assume that the gimel chatzeres are not mitzdarf if they're one on top of the other. I would assume they have to be next to each other, all on the ground level. Whatever is on stilts or whatever is on the second floor, I would assume is no good. So if you have three dormitory buildings near each other, okay, that's not so common to have three dormitory buildings near each other. I don't know.
Is that an absolute? Say that even if you have something like that?
No. It just says ruba de ruba. Usually you don't have it. He says, if you have a dormitory, so you have it. Okay. So that's going to be the theme of this perek. How do you draw the city limits? So that not only do you have a pi mama circle around your home, no, you draw the city like a rectangle, Then you draw around that a big rectangle. So the Mishnah says, if you have houses protruding in every house within 70 amas to a previous house, and it keeps on going, so then you draw the line, the easternmost house, the northernmost house, the southernmost house, the westernmost house, and that makes, that constitutes your tavla merubas, that constitutes your rectangular shape.
Yeah,
so the angle is more than 2,000 amas, so the Mishnah says you'll be gaining in the corners also. You draw the city as if it's a rectangle, and then you draw the tumen as if it's a rectangle also. But that's a din in a city. If a person lives all by himself in a house in the desert or in the mountains, all by himself, a lot of times in the mountains the homes are so far apart from each other, they're more than 70 amas bishar, more than 70 amas away from each other. So you don't have a city. So each person tak only has a pi mama circle around his house. And if he wants to go to shul, sometimes he'll need an erbe tumen in order to go to shul.
But there are places where you can have stretches in the U.S. of 30 or 40 or 50 miles, yeah, with houses within 70 amos in some care. New York to Los Angeles.
Right. So the Gemara is going to say that within 70 amos doesn't always solve the problem. The Gemara is going to talk about an ir hasuya kikeshes. Let's say you have a city that's a semicircle, but everything else is missing. So you don't say that the whole, you don't draw a rectangular shape and say that from New York to Los Angeles, the whole thing is one big city. Too much missing in between. So the Gemara has, sometimes you have a cockeyed shape of a city. It's not always going to be a rectangle. If you have too many gaps missing in between, it's a teignish. We're going to have to learn that. Halacha l'maisa, it's the same thing.
Same
the halacha is the same thing. A difference in pronunciation, but the din is the same. Yeah, the halacha is the same. Yeah. Then the Gemara is going to say that there were different areas of Eretz Yisrael. There were Bnei Yehuda and Bnei Galil. Different areas in Eretz Yisrael. So Bnei Yehuda, who lived near Yerushalayim, used to pronounce Hebrew properly. Bnei Galil were sloppy in their pronunciation. They slurred all the words and everything. So the Gemara says, we ought to ask somebody for Bnei Yehuda. They used to be big daikonim. They used to pronounce Hebrew properly. So there's some of them, new Mishnah. You say, ask him, how do they pronounce Ketzad Ma'abrit? Did they pronounce it with an ayin, or did they pronounce it with an aleph? Does anybody know someone from the Bnei Yehuda? Let's ask him on this Mishnah how to pronounce it. Here, take a look on the third line on Nun Gimel Amud Beis. Third line from the top. Amar Ababa, he ikod the mashaluhu, the Bnei Yehuda, if there's someone who can ask one of the people from Eretz Yehuda, the Daiki Lishni, they know how to pronounce, they're very careful the way they pronounce Hebrew. How do they pronounce it? Ma'abrim Tanan or Ma'abrim Tanan? Do they pronounce it with an aleph? These are the days of the Amorim that the Mishnais were still not written down. And the same thing, Akuza Tanan or Akuza Tanan. There's a Mishnah, in, Rashi quotes, there's a Mishnah in Bchoiris that lists off, you have a series of boring Mishnais. For me, it's very boring. For someone who knows biology, anatomy, it's very fascinating. So the Mishnah lists off what's considered a balmum by behemoth, that a carbon that has a mum, you're not allowed to be makif, and what's considered a balmum by a person. But doctors, mustama, it's very good for one who does no medicine, does no anatomy. So we don't understand. Trefus also, remember, the summer that I learned chulin, I learned Taylor Trefus, I was learning charusa with a pre-med student. Mm-hmm. Now he's a doctor. So he loved it. He loved Taylor Trefus. I didn't understand one word. I didn't know what organs they were describing there. Yeah. So the Mishnah there discusses a certain mum. So the Mishnah has a word. The person should sit, akusa means he should sit on his rear end, the way we sit, and see how the organs sit. So there's a question there. Also, the din is exactly the same, just a question of pronunciation. Do you pronounce it with an aleph or with an ayin? So he said, does anybody know someone from Bnei Yehuda who recites Mishnayis? Ask him, how do they pronounce it? So they found someone, and they asked him, how do you pronounce it? And so he said, there are two traditions. He said, there are two traditions. Whether you pronounce it on both. On both Mishnayis, both the Mishnah in Erevin and the Mishnah there in Bchoiris. Shaldin hu, they asked him, Ramala, Ikadatani Rabbi, Ikadatani Abram, Ikadatani Akuza, Ikadatani Akuza. The Gemara says there are two traditions, and I think that's all. So that's what Rabbi Shmuel, they both learned by Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. So they heard from him, I don't know, how can it be? Maybe Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi himself said that both. The they were brought up in different countries. I don't know. Don't know. So how did that help? So how did they hear from Rabbi Yudan Nas? Could be. Good? I don't know. That's the Mishnah. Let's see, the Gemara says there were other disputes. Here the Gemara, Nun Gim Laman Aleph, says in addition to this argument between Rabbi Shmuel, on the first daf in Bava Kama, you have a Mishnah. Our Bava says, Zikan Ashur, Bahabor, Bahamava, Bahahever. So they, Rabbi Shmuel both learned by Rabbi Yudan Nasi. So there's a machlokes. Rabbi Shmuel, how do you translate the word mave? Whether mave is eh adam or mave is eh hashem. So if mave is adam, so shor includes keren shein beregel. If mave is shein, so shein beregel is the same. So nonetheless, he says shor is regel and mave is shein. And what about Karen? We're not listing Karen because Karen is only Chatzi Nezik. So the question is, they both learned by Rabbi Yudan Nasi. So what did Rabbi Yudan Nasi say? He taught Mishnah. So what did he say? So the Meiri poses that question. So the Meiri says he thinks that this was his guessing. He thinks this was an old tradition from earlier generations, Arbavis Nezikin, and there were two traditions where there Adam counts as one of the Arbavis Nezikin and Karen Shem V'Regel are counted as one. Or Adam is not included, it's only Niske Mamono, and Shen and Regel are counted as two different ones, and Karen is not listed at all. And Rabbi Yudan Nasi must have picked the word Mave to satisfy both traditions. He wrote the word Shor, that you can interpret it as you wish, and he wrote the word Mave, which can mean Adam, and it can mean Shen, it can mean either way, because they're both, there were two traditions that he had. And the machlekes, Rabbi Shmuel, is not a machlekes. What did they hear from Rabbi Yudan Nasi? Rabbi Yudan Nasi told them both traditions, and he told them that's why he picked this vague word, maven, the vague word, shor. And the machlekes, Rabbi Shmuel, is which of the two traditions makes more sense? So maybe it's the same over here. Maybe Rabbi Yudan Nasi gave him two versions of what the Mishnah says, and they were arguing which one makes more sense. Whether the Lashon Aver makes more sense, or the Lashon Muberis makes more sense. I don't know. So the Gemara now starts going into other disputes between Rabbi Shmuel. So the Gemara says, Ma'oras Hamachpelo, in the beginning of Parshas Chayisora, when Sori Mena passed away, and Avraham Avinu said he's not allowed to bury her in a Goyisha cemetery. So they offered him, we'll give you a B'mivcha Kvarei. He said, no, you're not allowed to bury a Jew in a Goyisha cemetery. So he bought the Ma'oras Hamachpelo. So what does it mean, Machpelo? Kefel. Kefel means twice. What's double? Rabbi Shmuel had an argument. Chadot Omar, one of the two Amoraim, said, Shnei batim zelif nimizeh v'charama bayis vali agabo. One said it's a house with a second floor, that's called Machpelah, Kefel. The other one says it's a room deeper inside, the two rooms, one next to the other. They're both true. Oh, okay. So I guess they were never there. I guess they're having a machlegs. They were never there. They're both true. Okay.
And if you look right now, somebody in 1980 went down to
Barzal. So there's one on top of the other and one behind the other. Okay. So the Gemara didn't realize that maybe both are true. The Gemara thought it's either one or the other. So the Gemara says one on top of the other, that we understand, that's called Kefal. But one house behind the other house, one room behind the other tomb. Why is that called Kefal? The Gemara said, "Bishleim alamandi amazel al gabi zeh hayne machpela." That makes sense. Kefil ela alamandi, because then it was very rare to have a two-story house. Apparently, it's unusual. So that's called kefil. But to have one room next to the other, you have a big house on the ground level with a lot of rooms. So why do you call that kefil? Ela alamandi amar shnei batim zeh lefnim zeh. One room a bayis says chsaftam al mezuzas beisecho v'sharech. What do you mean? You put a mezuzah on the doorpost of beisecho. What do you mean beisecho? Beisecha doesn't mean your house. Beisecha means your room. If you have a lot of rooms, you put mezuzah on every room. The Ramah in the beginning of Hilchas Mezuzah writes that some people had an incorrect practice. They only put a mezuzah on the front door. They didn't bother putting mezuzahs on the other rooms. And he says that's not correct. You're obligated to put a mezuzah on every room. And says, Saftamam mezuzah, beisecha. Beisecha means every room of your house. Bisharecha means a different thing. Shari chatzeres, that's a different thing. But beisecha means a room. So what does it mean? Bayis Shnei batim zelif nimizeh, one room behind the other room. So one room behind the other. Why do you call it kefil? Every house has a few rooms. The Gemara says, my machpelah, if it means one room behind the other, so why do you call it machpelah? And for the Gemara, no, shekfula bezugos. It has pairs of people buried there. Who do you have? You have Adam and Chava buried, Avram and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, and you have Yankif and Leah. And the Gemara says, that's one opinion, that's why it's called Mamre Kiryas Arba. What does it mean, Kiryas Arba? So we usually assume that there were four giants who lived there. And that's why it's called Kiryas Arba, the city of the four giants. So this Amora says, no, Rabbi Yitzchak says, Kiryas Arba, there were Arba Zugas over there. There were four pairs of people, prominent historical figures, buried there. Adam Echaba, Ram Sara, Yitzchak Rivka, Yankif Aleyev. Yeah, I guess it's called Al Shem Sofo. The Gemara says sometimes you have locations, they have a name, the name was given later. So we call it by that name even generations before, because by the time the Chumash was given, at that time it was called Kiryas Arba. In the days of Avraham Avinu, apparently the Gemara is claiming it wasn't yet called Kiryas Arba, because he didn't have all the four peers living. If it's a name after the four giants, so already in the days of Avraham Avinu it was called Kiryas Arba. But if it's called Kiryas Arba because of the four Zugos, so then it wasn't yet called Kiryas Arba. It was only called Mamre. Once the Gemara is already listing off, so they're listing off several other arguments between Rabbi Shmuel as to how to read Psukim and Chumash. It says, Vayibi Mei Amrofel. Who is this Amrofel? So they all had a tradition that this Amrofel is the same person as Nimrod. So what was his name and what was his nickname? So they had a Machlekes Rabbi Shmuel. Chadam, and one of them says his real name, when he was born, they gave him a name, Nimrod. That was his official name. V'lama Nikra Shmo Amrofel, why was that his nickname? Omar Pul. He was the one who said, we should throw our Avraham Avinu into the Kibshan Ha'esh because he doesn't want to worship Abed Zorah. And they taka threw him in and he walked out of the Kibshan Ha'esh without getting burned. So Omar, he ordered the Hippelah Avraham Avinu b'toch Kibshan Ha'esh. So that was the nickname. And the other Amore, Rabbi Shmuel had the argument. The other Amore, Chado Amar, no. His name, when he was born, he gave him the name Amrofel, whatever that means. The parents had some kind of kavana. But the nickname was Nimrod. Why did they give him such a nickname? V'lama Nikra Shmo Nimrod. Why did they give him a nickname? Nimrod. Shehimer is called Olam Kuloi Olav B'malchusa. He got everybody to worship Abed Zorah and to rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So merit is a rebellion, so they called him Nimrod as a nickname. His real name was Amrofel. And Nimrod was the nickname he got all of mankind, he got most of mankind to rebel against the kingdom of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And they had also Machlekes, Rabbi Shmuel. They're running through all the Machlekes and Rabbi Shmuel HaChumash. I'm sure they don't cover all of them. There are many more. I don't know why they picked Dafka on these. I don't know. The Pasuk says, Vayokim Elochadosh HaMitzrayim Mishel Lo Yada Es Yosef. A new king was appointed over Egypt who didn't know anything about Yosef. What is it? Huh? Rashi. Yeah. So Rabbi Shmuel had an argument. Chad HaMachadosh Mamish, he was taking a new king. And Itak didn't know about Yosef. How can he not know about Yosef? They didn't teach history. Okay. So they didn't want to teach that part of history. Chado Amanov is the same old king as before. He would live through the whole history of Yosef, but he decided not to be makatoif to Yosef. Chado Amanov, the other one is of the opinion, Chodesh means Shenishchatshu Gzei Roisov. He decided to adopt a different policy to be mean to the Jewish people. So the Gemara says, Ma di Amah Chodesh Mamish, the opinion who says that it was a new king, Dichsiv Chodesh. That's the Pirush Amidus of Chodesh. Amanda Amish and Schachu Gzei Roisov, what motivates him to say such a funny pshat? That it was the same old king. The simple reading of the Pasuk is Amela Chodesh. The Gemara says, no, because it doesn't say Middle Ksiv Ayomas Vayimloch. Very often in Chumash it says that the next king was so-and-so, then when he, upon his death, another king took over, and upon his death, another king took over. Here it doesn't say that the previous power died and a new power took over. It just says, Vayok Melech Chodesh Amitzrayim. What happened to the old Melech Yosh? And the answer is, the same old king, he just adopted new policy. Since it doesn't say Vayomas Vayimloch, so it's the same king. Freg di Gemara. Well, the man the Amish and his Chachuk Zeroy, so it was the same old king. How do you translate the next phrase, Ashelo Yodas Yosef? If he was the Paro, the same Paro who lived through the whole period of Yosef, and Yosef saved the whole Middle East at that time, so how do you translate Ashelo Yodas? The Gemara says, no, it doesn't mean Ashelo Yodas, he didn't know. Etzach gemacht nicht wissen dich. Ashelo Yodas Yosef, the Havidomi commander Lo Yodas Leli Yosef, he made believe, mean, he didn't want to express his hakaras hatayif to yours. That's what the Medrash says on that pasuk. What led Paro later on to say lo yadayti es Hashem, when Moshe Rabbeinu says Hakadosh Baruch Hu yud kevav ki sent me that you should free the Jewish people. So he says lo yadayti es Hashem. I don't know who that God is. So the Medrash says, what led him to say it like that? Because he lacked Hakoras HaTov, Asher Lo Yadas Yosef. He didn't want to know about Yosef. One who's Lo Yada Yosef doesn't have Hakoras HaTov to Abbas of Adam. The end is going to be that he's not going to have Hakoras HaTov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu either. And then he's going to lose his whole Emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a major theme in the Chovos HaLevavos. He says that the thing that's mechazik, our belief in God, is our sense of decency of Hakoras HaTov. So we recognize all the hatovas that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did to us, so we don't forget about the existence of God. But one who doesn't have such a sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Abbas of Adam, you can't develop HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the invisible God in heaven above. He's not here. So first you have to develop HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Abbas of Adam. And then you can graduate from that and have a HaKadosh Baruch Hu to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So because Lo Yada Es Yosef, that's why that led to Lo Yadayti Es Hashem. Now the Gemara quotes Amar Rabbi Yechanan. Rabbi Yechanan was the first generation of Amoraim. Rabbi Yechanan learned by Rabbi Yudah Nasi, same time as Rabbi Shmuel. And then he also learned by Rabbi Shia Berebi. Berebi means a Gadol Ador. So he says,
Rishi was in this. Huh?
Yeah, Rabbi Yechanan lived in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah. Rabbi Yudah Nasi lived in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah. Amar Rabbi Yechanan Yud Ches Yamim. I spent 18 days Gidalti Yitzel Rabbi Shia Berebi. Spent 18 days. Who he must have learned all of Shas. The whole 18 days that I was there, I only learned one word. That's kefelach. The Mishnah Seina. Why? An aleph instead of an ayin. That's the only thing that he learned in 18 days. What? That's ridiculous. Any? It can't be true. Rabbi Yochanan. We have another statement from Rabbi Yochanan. The Rabbi Shia had 12 outstanding students, Yud Beis Talmidim Hoylo Le Rabbi Shia Berebi, and I spent 18 days in his Beis Medrash. The whole time he learned years and years by Rabbi Yudah Nasi. And after Rabbi Yudah Nasi died, I guess, Rabbi Shia was a student. Abchir Rabbi Shia was students of Rabbi Yudah Nasi. So he says, after Rabbi Yudah Nasi died, he spent 18 days in his yeshiva, and the 18 days he chaptois everybody's, he figured out everybody's derech and learning. Yudches Yomim Gidalti Beinehem, among the 12 students, outstanding students of Rabbi Yoshia, v'lamadati, in those 18 days I learned Leiv Kolechad V'yechad V'chachmas Kolechad V'yechad Chabasachos Kolent, everything, everybody's Shita, everybody's Hashkaf, everything. So Frek Digmar, what do you mean he only learned one thing from Rabbi Yoshia? He says he learned everything from all the Talmidim. So the Gemara gives a few answers. So the Gemara says, Leiv kalecha v'yechad v'chachmas kalecha v'yechad goma. Gemara loy goma. Means philosophy and derech learning that he picked up, but actual learning, he only learned one thing, and the one thing was that the correct pronunciation in the Mishnah is not the way it's printed by us with an ayin. It's perikatsed ma'avrim with an aleph, loshen avrim instead of. That's the first answer the Gemara gives. The other answer the Gemara gives is no, he spent 18 days talking to the 12 students. He learned the Welt from the students. He learned many, many, many halachas from the students. The only thing, one and only thing he had learned from the Rebbe was that the correct reading in our Mishnah should be Ketzim Abram with an Aleph. But from the Talmidim he learned a Welt. He learned so much he was able to pick up the Derech and the Hashkafah of each one of them. That's the second answer.
Rabbi Yochanan was a student of Rebbe, and Rabbi Moshe was a student of Rebbe. Was Yochanan absent that day when
he
went to Mishnah? I mean, they both heard the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
He learned it all.
I don't know. Apparently he was a younger student. You know, so he had students for many years. So he must have been a younger student. So the first answer is he picked up Hashkof and he picked up Derech and learning, but actual learning, he only picked up one Shvach Hazach, that the correct pronunciation is with an Aleph. Eboy Seyvnik Mar says another answer is Minai Dutu Gomar. From the 12 Talmidim he picked up Avelt, but Minai Didei, from the Rebbe, Loi Gomar. From the Rebbe he didn't learn anything outside of this one thing, the correct pronunciation in the Mishnah should be an Aleph. Eboy Seyvnik, maybe we're not sure exactly what Rebbe. This is Talmud Bavli, this is written in Bavel. So they had students would come from Eretz Yisrael once in a long while, and they would tell them psokim of Rabbi Yochanan, stories about Rabbi Yochanan. So they're trying to stitch together trying to put together the picture. They have a contradiction. Maybe all the three answers are incorrect. Maybe the Talmud Yerushalmi has a different answer. Maybe we'll have to look for, but the Bavli is trying to figure out there's an apparent contradiction, so they gave three suggestions. Could be all three are wrong. And then the Gemara said, "Vibay Seima." Maybe there's a different answer. Davrecha b'Mishnah Seinu Kama. Maybe meant to say in Mishnayos he only heard one word. The correct reading in the Mishnah is with an Aleph. Maybe he heard Brises and Memris and other halachas, many, many, 18 days worth. He must have learned a lot. Then he has a comment. The Amar Rabbi Yechon. That's the reason why they quoted. Because Rabbi Yechon says he thinks the correct reading he heard from Rabbi Oshia, the correct reading should be within Aleph. Then he says, V'yamar Rabbi Yechanan, he says, this Rabbi Oshia, this student of Rabbi Yudah Nasi, he was an outstanding genius. He was unbelievable. He was light years ahead of everybody else in his generation, just like Rabbi Meir in his generation was light years ahead of everybody else, and that's why we rarely paskin like Rabbi Meir, because the students couldn't follow. He was on such a high level of learning. He had hardly any students because he had such a high level of highfalutin level of a shir. So the next generation, when they were voting to paskin halacha, so Rabbi Meir's students always lost out because he had the overwhelming majority of the talmidim of the next generation didn't learn by Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir Rabbi Yudah Lachik Rabbi Yudah, Meir Rabbi Yosef Lachik Rabbi Yosef. We had all the gemaras. We always outvote Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Yechanan says the same thing was by Rabbi Oshia. Kishehayinu lomdim Torah etzel Rabbi Oshia. What do you mean lomdim Torah? He was only there for 18 days. But that's what he says when he was learning by Rabbi Oshia. Where is it? It's Rabbi Oshia. Hayinu yoshvim arboa bo amo. How much is an amo? It's not so much. An amo is six tochen. Here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Something like this. So he says, we were sitting so close to each other, everybody was sitting in order to concentrate on the learning. Everybody was sitting near the Rebbe. That's where Rabbi Yechanan says, when we learned by Rabbi Oshia. Amar Rebbe. Rabbi Yudah Nosi was the Rebbe of Rabbi Yechanan and the Rebbe of Rabbi Oshia. It says, Kishahayinu lom nimtara etzel Rabbi Loza ben Shamua. When I was a student, I was learning by a different Tana, earlier generation. It was more crowded. They had six people leaning on top of each other, learning. Okay, so he was telling about how they were crowding in to listen to the Shir, reminiscing about the Shir. And then he says, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Oshia was so outstanding. Rabbi Oshia berebi bedoro. Berebi means a gadol hador. Rabbi Oshia was such a great Goyen in his generation, much greater than the other, just like Rav Meir Bidoro, just like Rav Meir his generation. What's the Hashvo? What's the Tzushtel? So he says, just like my Rabbi Meir Bidoro, just like Rav Meir his generation, where he was light years ahead of all the others, Loyachlu Chaver Olam and Alsoif died, that he couldn't follow. He used to draw circles around the others, they couldn't follow him. Avraham Boshia and his generation, Loyachlu Chaver Olam and Alsoif died. Rav Meir lost out to Psak Halacha because of that, because he had hardly any Talmidim. Rav Boshia apparently didn't lose out. Rav Boshia didn't say so many original things, but he was a very deep thinker, so he says they hardly had, they couldn't really follow what he said. He was a big guy. Amar Rabbi Yechanan said, now Rabbi Yechanan makes a comment about the Yiridus Hadoros. He's going to say that as the generations go on, so the learning is weaker and weaker. The Yerushalmi in Shulchan Aruch, they quote, the Yerushalmi says, the Midas became weaker and weaker also. The Yiridus Hadoros, the Midas became weaker. The Ramah in Shulchan Aruch, Ibn Ezra quotes this from the Hagos Maimri Halacha L'maisa. The Gemara has a din in Soita and Ksubis and in different Mesichtas. Let's say a woman is married. A couple lives in the neighborhood, the woman is married. And then one fine day, the woman wants to remarry. So we said, what do you mean you want to remarry? Your husband is still alive. So she says, the husband divorced me. So does the woman doesn't have the manus to say the husband divorced me. She has to have a documentation. She has to have a get, or today she doesn't hold on to the get. She holds a document that's given to her by the bezna, which this is to ascertain that she was given a gerishin and everything, she's allowed to remarry. So let's say the woman says in the presence of her husband, Ha'isha Shomer Labaila Gerashtani, Bifnei Baila. She says it in the presence of her husband. So the Gemara says that Bizman HaGemara, what normal woman would say in the presence of her husband, Gerashtani, if it's not true, Ein Isha Mi'iza Paneha Bifnei Baila. In the days of the Gemara, a woman wouldn't have the gall to say to the husband in his presence, Gerashtani. So if she says Gerashtani, is Nemenis. So the Ramah quotes in Shulchan Aruch, Bizman Azaz, Nitazai. The women will have chutzpah, they'll say whatever they want. And he quotes this from the Rishonim, from Agros Maimini, who says, based on the Talmud Yerushalmi, that it's like just a generation ago, one of the Amoraim says, just a generation ago, I knew Tanoim, they were Kodshi Kodoshim, and now we are Chulei Chulin. There's just a gap of one generation. There's already such a contrast between the earlier generation. No, there are people alive today who remember tzaddikim from before the Second World War. They say they were holy tzaddikim and they were fasting tanaisim for 40 years and they were learning Torah and going to the mikvah all the time. We don't see in chutzlars, we don't see these kind of things. In Eretz Yisrael, they have a little bit like that. We don't see such kind of people. Such a short span of time. So that's what he's making such a contrast. Zohar's going to talk about this. The Yeridus HaDeiros. Sometimes it's relevant to Halacha. Yeridus HaDeiros. Psychology changes sometimes. It depends on different communities, different generations. The Gemara says, in the days of the Gemara, where they lived, Ein Isha Miza Paneh Bifnei Bala. A woman would never have the gall to say in the presence of her husband, Gerashtani, unless it was true. And later generations is not necessarily true. Psychology does change. I remember Rav Soloveitchik said, we have an assumption in the days of the Talmud that Milsa Davida Leglui Loi Meshakri Inshi. Even in a situation where you should really need two Edim, but if a person is going to give testimony on an issue, that you can catch him red-handed in a lie. Tomorrow, next week, we're going to find out whether it's so or not. So the person will never have the chutzpah to tell a lie on a Milsa Davida Leglui Loi Meshakri Inshi. So Rav Soloveitchik said, after Khrushchev appeared in the United Nations, and they, I already forgot the whole history. Who asked him? Nixon asked him. He had missiles in Cuba, and he said no. And then he showed him Tokadei Dibur, the photographs of the missiles. They went weiter. He went on weiter. He said today people are the heads of state are not embarrassed to tell lies. The bigger the lies, so you get away with everything. Nothing means anything today. So he said he wonders whether that didn't. That assumption still applies Bizman Azad. The Milsa Davida Leglui Loi Meshakri Inshi, that people have nemonis to taste, to say, to be mavar the facts in a Dovish al Mammon or a Dovish al Bi'ervo, where Erechud is not believed. But if it's a Milsa Davida Leglui, it's an umdina that he would never tell lies. So he says he doesn't know whether it's true today anymore. The psychology changes from generation to generation.
That would really knock out a lot of like, ain't no debate, a whole bunch of things like that.
A lot of things. That's what he said, you have to reinvestigate. The psychology, in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah quotes, that this psychology, he thinks that this psychology changed. Ain't isha meiza panah bifnei bala, there's a yiridus haderes. Rav Soloveitchik said, it could be the many, many points of psychology changed. Someone misquoted Rav Soloveitchik as saying, we don't recognize psychology. It's not so, of course we recognize that, because you have to make an umdin in any generation. What he said was a different thing. He was upset when one of the rabbis thought that the psychological assumption that the Talmud makes, that Tavla Mesef Tandum, Ele Mesef Armalu, that the women are more interested in getting married than the men are, and a woman, even if she has a college degree, and the husband is a nothing, so she'll feel bad about getting divorced, and the women are more interested in getting married, so on. So he thought that psychology can't change because that says in Parshas Bereishis, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Adam and Chava, so he said at that time he's building this into the nature of Chava. So Rabbi Hirsch in his commentary on Chumash says that's what it says in that Parsha. This umdina of Tav Lameis of Tandu appears there. So Rav Soloveitchik thought that an umdina that the rabbis established over the generation, umdinas come and go. You have to figure out. The Ramah says in Shulchan Aruch, he thought, Milsa Davida Leglui Vamishakri, she couldn't be that changed also. But an umdina that's mentioned in Parshas Bereishis in connection with the Briya, so he thought that's built into the Briya, and that can't change. And at the time that he gave that public talk, and he expressed his opinion, not all the Rabbanim agreed. A lot of people in Lakewood said, Bezo. He was upset, Rabbi Soloveitchik was upset, why a certain Orthodox rabbi said, he thinks that Um didn't change, and he attacked him that he's a sheikid, and it's not so. You can throw out the former sichtes, ksubas and yivamas and gitna and kiddush, and throw out all the former sichtes. You're going to tell me that this Um didn't change. So the people in Lakewood said, why is he so? Why did he get so carried away? We know that Um didn't change. So he explained why he thought this Um didn't doesn't change. Maybe yeah, maybe no. Okay, he thought that this one is in Parshas Bereishis, but other Umdinas do change. So that's what he says over here. Rabbi Yechanan is going to say about the Yeridus Hadoris. He says that Amr Rabbi Yechanan Liban shall be shown him in the earlier generations that such a deep understanding of the world, it was their understanding, their heart was so wide, Kipisko shel Ulam, in front of the Beis Hamikdash, there was like in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, there was the Mishkan, so they had the Heichal in the Beis Hamikdash, and the Heichal had a certain width, and in front of the Heichal there was a room that was even wider than the Heichal that was called an Ulam. And what exactly is the status of the Ulam? Does it have the same status as the Heichal or not? It's a whole discussion in the Gemara. What exactly is the status? In the days of Moshe Rabbeinu there was no Ulam, you just had the Heichal and that's it. Then you had the Azara. And the Bayisheni, they had an ulam in front of the Heichal. So the ulam was much wider, twice as wide as the Heichal. So Rabbi Yechanan says, Libum shall be shown him, the tzaddikim in the earlier generations, their heart was so wide, they had such a deep understanding, was Kepischa shel ulam. V'shalach ra'inim in the later generations was narrower, half their width was Kepischa shel Heichal. V'anu, and what are we like? He says, we're like the crack in a needle, the eye of a needle. It's so teeny weeny. The Pischa Shel Ulam is so wide, the Pischa Shel Heichal is so wide, and the crack in the needle is mamish nothing, you can hardly see it. And he says, V'anu, and what do we like? Him alone, Nekev Machat Sitkis. Who are the Rishonim? Who are the Achrayim? Who are we? So he says, I'm Rabbi Yechanan. But which Rishonim is he? Who is he contrasting? So the Gemara says, the Rishonim he's talking about, that's Rabbi Kiva. He had such a deep understanding, his heart was like the width of the Ulam. Achrayim is talking about a later Tanur Rabbi Loza ben Shamur. Ikadiyami, another version has it. No, the Rishayim is Rabbi Loza ben Shemua, and Achrayim is Rabbi Oshia Berebi. For Anu Kimlo Nakev Machat Sitkis. And on our hearts, we have so little understanding, we're like the eye of a needle, the Shvach, Shvach of comprehension. That's Rabbi Yechanan, who was the first generation of Amoraim. Then Abai Veravu were a few generations later, quite a few years later. Amar Abaye is even adding on that we are at a lower level, Zavaita lower than Rabbi Yechanan, says Va'anan, and we are even less than that. Like you bang a peg into a hole in the wall, so there isn't even a hole there. There's hardly anything there. You make a little hole. There's a teeny weeny crack in the wall, so you bang in a peg. At least the eye of the needle is a hole there. Here in the wall, there isn't even anything there. So he says, Va'anan, and we are kisichsa like a peg, beguda that you ligimore, to understanding Talmud. We're very shvach. Rabba was a contemporary of Abai, so he also says such a lashon. We are so shvach in learning, as in contrast to the earlier generations in Tanoim and earlier Amoraim, we are ke'etz bo'asa bekira lisvara. Abai was talking about ligimara. Gemara means to be able to rattle off all of the dinim, with or without understanding. Svara means to be able to interpret, to analyze. So Abai was talking about one aspect. We are shvach in Gemara and saying over traditions. We don't even have the width of the opening of the eye of the needle. And Rav is talking about Svara, analyzing, says, we are ke'etz ba'asa b'kira. Sometimes you have wax that melted. If you have a wax candle, so you can't stick your finger in the wax candle. It's hard. But even the wax that melted, so you put your finger in, it'll move in a little bit. It's softer than the wax on the candle. But it's not going to move too far. So he says, shvach amaisis. We have no shvachas dvaris. Then Rav Ashi was even later. Rav Ashi was a few generations after Rav, I think. Amar Rav Ashi, Anan, we in a later generation, as far as shikha, as far as forgetfulness, we are like a person puts his finger into an opening of a bore. So the bore is very wide. So there's a lot of room to put you. So he says, not that we are so strong in svara. We say, we are so strong in shikha, we forget everything. The little bit that we figured out, that we worked on, we figured out. We are kids, boss, but beer the shikha, we forget everything. So that's what the Gemara is saying. They started to quote about Rabbi Yechanan, and Rabbi Yechanan said the correct reading in the Mishnah should be with an Aleph, Ma'abrim, instead of an Ayin that's printed over here. So Rabbi Yechanan was saying that he studied for 18 days in Rabbi Oshia's yeshiva, he was saying what a genius he was. And then, so they finished off the whole statement about the Yeridus, Hadaris, and so on. Then the Gemara is going to say that the difference between Bnei Golil and Bnei Yehuda, the leading up to this, that they said Bnei Yehuda, well, they were very medayik in the way they would pronounce language in general, and the way they would say over Mishnais in a very precise fashion. So they asked, some Rabbasi said, why don't we ask someone from the B'nai Yehuda what the correct reading in the Mishnah is? So they finally found someone and they asked him. He said, yeah, the two traditions, with an Aleph or an Ayin. So Tilei led up to that. The whole punchline is that is in an Aleph or an Ayin. So Tilei lead up to that. So they drew a whole contrast between B'nai Yehuda and B'nai Gol. The B'nai Yehuda were more successful in learning than B'nai Gol. So they're trying to figure out why is that so. So the first thing Mara thinks, because they spoke Loshon Nekiyah. B'nai Yehuda were more careful, and B'nai Gola spoke grub. They were not refined in the way they speak. So the Gemara says, so you're not so refined? There are a lot of people not refined, and they succeed in learning Torah. So what's so bad? The Gemara says, no. Not a question of refinement, that's Midas Tovus, that's a different thing. You should always speak Loshon Nekiyah, that's a different thing. You shouldn't speak Loshon Meguna. Gemara says, we take it back. Not that B'nai Yehuda were more refined, that doesn't help. No, they were more careful in the way they spoke. If you use language properly, so you can, in order to be able to analyze properly, you have to use a whole vocabulary. If you have a small vocabulary, so you won't be able to analyze well enough. So he says, that's what I meant to say. The B'nai Yehuda, not just, first he says, because B'nai Golo lo hikpidu al l'shonim, B'nai Yehuda hikpidu al l'shonim. As the Gemara says, hikpidu al l'shonim, just because they spoke more Loshon Nekiyah. Bikpeid ota bikpeid atal yimilsa. That's why they were successful more. The Gemara says, no, they were more medayik b'l'shonim. They were more careful to say over the dinim accurately and exactly the way they heard it from the Rebbe, and then they would make Rosh Tevis or other simonim or mazim to remember in what order they heard it from the Rebbe. But they go just was ongevarfen. They wouldn't be medayik to say it over exactly the same. They would change the lashanis. They wouldn't change the dinim, but they change the lashanis. They wouldn't make simonim to try to remember everything. So that's why B'nai Yehuda were more successful in learning. And then the Gemara says, another difference, why B'nai Yehuda were more successful than B'nai Golil, because B'nai Yehuda Gomra Mechad Rabbe. They learned all of the Torah from one Rebbe. If you learn from different Rebbes, so each Rebbe has a different way of expressing himself. When you say a Svara, each Rebbe has a different way, different terminology. They can be saying the same thing, but they're going to say it differently. So the Taisus over here, the bottom Taisus quotes from the Gemara Maseches Avodah Zarah, the first Perek, that is it better to learn by many Rebbes, or is it better to learn everything from one Rebbe? So the Gemara says, as far as picking up the information to know the dinim, to get the Mishnayos straight, so that's preferable to learn from one Rebbe, so you'll have one language. Because if you learn different dinim from different Rebbes, so he'll call it one Lashon, he'll call it a different Lashon, you get all confused. You get all the dinim straight from one Rebbe, and then after you get all the dinim straight, then you have to start to analyze. Analysis, that's kedai to learn by more than one Rebbe. So the Gemara says that B'nai Yehuda, when they were doing the first step, see, by us, we don't do like this. We have all the Torahs printed. So we don't first pick up all the information from the Rebbe, and then after we know all the Pshishas in the Mishnah, then we start to analyze. Everything is printed, so we're not afraid it's going to be forgotten. Now we attend the yeshiva, and one and the Rabbeim analyze what's going on. So you go from one Rebbe to the other, you're exposed to different drachim and learning. But in the days of the Gemara, first, the whole Torah Shebal Peh was Bal Peh. So first they had to pick up all the information, all the dinim, and that's preferable to learn from one Rebbe. And then, when they came to analysis, when it comes to Svara, so that the Gemara recommends they should learn from other Rebbe, from a few Rebbe, to pick up different perspectives. So the Gemara says, B'nai Yehuda, Taka observed that din. They learned all the dinim from one Rebbe. So they got everything clear. Everything was meduyak with one terminology. They didn't mix up all the terminologies. A lot of people say the same Torah. Everybody says briska Torah, briska sura brisk. Everybody says brisk, but they use different terminology for the exact same thing. Rav Soloveitchik used to say it one way, and other people in other yeshivas say the exact same thing with different lashonos. So that's very confusing. So the Gemara says when you're getting the information, you should learn it from one Rebbe. So the B'nai Yehuda learned from one Rebbe, so then Skaim Torasim. And B'nai Golil, the lo gam mechad Rebbe. They used to be sloppy. They learned from one Rebbe, another Rebbe, another. They were so confused that the Shonis were all confused. Then the Gemara said there was another difference. That's a little longer. B'nai Yehuda were more successful in learning because by them it was Galya Masechta. And B'nai Golil were not successful in learning because it was lo Galya Masechta. How do you translate Galya Masechta? What does the word mean? What does the word mean, Galya Masechta? So Rashi writes, Legalos asamasechta means to teach to others. B'nai Yehuda, not only did they learn it, the Gemara quotes Rabbi Onos, he said, Harbi lamadete merabaisai, mechaveira yoise merabaisai, mitalmida yoise mikulam. When you have to say over the Torah to someone else, you have to prepare it 100 times to make sure that that you say it correctly. You thought you knew it. Yeah, you knew it and you thought you know it. But then when you have to present it to others, you understand it even better. So that's what the Gemara says. B'nei Yehuda were Galya Masechta. They used the Chazrit and teach it to other people. So they succeeded better in learning. B'nei Galil. They heard the Shir and Shir. They didn't teach it over to anybody else. So they were lacking that. Mitalmida Yais and Mikulam. So that's why they were less successful in learning. That's the first pshat that Rashi gives. Galya Masechta means that he taught it to others. Rashi has another pshat. Galya Masechta means that they revealed the Masechta, that they learned it, they analyzed it in depth. B'nai Golo just learned superficially. B'nai Yehuda learned it in depth. And the Meiri over here has a third pshat. He says, Gali Masechta means that they give Mar Mekaymus in advance of the Shir. Mm-hmm. So he said, if the Rebbe doesn't give Mar Mekaymus in advance of the Shir, he can get away with anything. The students don't know all the Gemaras, they don't know the Rishon. So you hit them with a hole, with a ton of bricks, so you tell them it says like this, it says like that, they don't know. So they listen. If you give Mar Mekaymus in advance, and all the students prepare, and then the Rebbe says a shir, and the students challenge the Rebbe. I don't think that's what it says in the Gemara. I don't think that's what it says in the Torah. I don't think that's what the Rambam says. So the Rebbe has to defend his position. He has to say, he has to prove that his pshat is correct. So if you're going to be Galya Masecht, you're going to give Mar Mekaymus in advance. So then the Rebbe always used to give Mar Mekaymus in advance. He used to give such a list of Mar Mekaymus. On Tuesday, he would tell us what to prepare for Wednesday. It was enough to prepare for a whole week. Then Wednesday he would tell us what to prepare for the next week. If you give Mar Mekaymus in advance so the students can prepare, they can challenge the Rebbe. The Gemara draws the contrast between David HaMelech and Shaul HaMelech. It says, David HaMelech says, Vahid Dovi V'chol D'Rocha Maskil Hashem Imoi. And by Shaul it says, V'chol HaShayifne Yarshia. So what does that mean? So the Gemara says it does mean that he was an evil person, Shaul. It just means, in Psak HaLoch he was Shvach. His psak was incorrect a lot of times. In Dabba, he drove the chol the racha of Maskav Hashem Mima Hakadosh Baruch Hu was always with him. Shalach kemoise b'chamakim. He was always mechaben lamitu shalter. So the Gemara raised the question: how come Dabba Namelach always paskin correctly and Shalom Melach made a lot of mistakes? So the Gemara says: because Dabba Namelach was a smart cookie, he was galya masechta. Whatever that means, either he taught to others, or he analyzed in depth, or he gave Mar Mekaymus in advance of the Shir. So when he gave the Shir, the students challenged him, and it worked it out better. And Shaul HaMelech was Lo Galya Masechta, whatever that means, all the three Pshatim. So that's why the one who's Galya Masechta will succeed better in learning. So after all of this, the Gemara finally says, these Bnei Yehuda, they used to be very medactic on pronouncing words. So let's ask one of them, what's the correct reading in the Girsa and the Mishnah? So they asked one of them, so they said there are two traditions. Yeah, he was a gadol in learning, but in Psak Halacha was Shvach. That's how the Gemara explains over here. Psak Halacha is Shvach.
Why were we talking about Yehuda and Galil? Because Rabbi Yehuda and Rossi fought with Yochanan and Galil.
I'm sure there were exceptions to the rule. I was talking about the Hamoinam who lived in Galil. Some of there were groups who learned and lived in the Galil who were Medayik. Those who came from Eretz Yehuda, they moved to Galil. Mustamar Habiranas, he started off in Eretz Yehuda. Then he moved to Galil, so he was still Medayik Belishnim. But those who were all along from Galil, so the Gemara says they were Shvach in learning because they were Shvach in pronouncing the Hebrew properly. This week is Parshas Kisetze, so it's a double Parsha Zohar. You have at the end of the Parsha, you have Zechiras Chet Amalek. You have to remember Amalek. You have to remember that we should wage war against Amalek, that the evil is not going to there's a lot of evil in the world, and it's not going to disappear by itself. The Rebbe Shalom commands us, we have to wage war against Amalek. We have to fight Amalek. The whole mitzvah is Zechiras Amalek is we should remember that we should wage war. That's what the Sefer HaChinuch writes, that women are not mechuyev in hearing Parsha Zohar because women are not drafted into the army. The only ones that have to hear Parsha Zohar are those who are mechuyev to do something about it. So that's one zechira you have in the Parsha. That we usually say the Shabbos before Purim. So whoever missed, so you hear this Shabbos. And then you have in the middle of the Parsha, you have in Shishi, Zohar es Rosh Hashanah Miriam Badech, but says, so we have to remember Chet Miriam. So there's some Rishonim write that this is the Ramban writes like this, and there's a Yalkut Shemoinin, the Mogen Avraham quotes. There's also a mitzvah, one of the Taryag mitzvahs. We should remember Chet Miriam. What is that all about? So the Sifrei says we should remember that Miriam was punished for talking Lashon Hara, so that's why she suffered with Tzaras. We should remember the punishment that one gets for talking Lashon Hara. The Chafetz Chaim has one of his little swarms called Zocha LeMiriam, and it's all about Lashon Hara. So Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, he thinks that that's an additional level of interpretation. He doesn't think that that's the Pshutu Shal Mikro. One of the Sheish Tchiris sounds like something, Lashon Hara is a terrible Avera, but you don't make an Iker in the religion of it. There are serious Averas, but it sounds like a Zechira is an Iker and Amunah. So he mentioned the name of Rav Kook in the Siddur, and the name of Adi Gdolim, that the Pshutu Shal Mikro means a different thing. We should remember Chet Miriam, that she said, who does my brother Moshe Rabbeinu think that he is? Does he think that he's greater than the other prophets? When she heard from Tzipora Eishes Moshe that he was Pirish Meishtoi from the day that he became a Navi, so she said, what an arrogant brother I have. I'm going to have to speak to him. I'm a Navi, my brother Aaron HaKohen is a Navi. We didn't have to, we're not so holy. We didn't have to separate from our spouses. What does my brother think that he has to separate from his spouse? So then Rabbanu Shlomo appeared to them and Parshas Baldoskin says, no, Moshe Rabbeinu is an Adam Mikol Adam. He's not arrogant. He's a much higher level of Nevuah than you are. So the Rambam counts that as one of the Yud Gimel Ikori HaMunin. The Nevuah is Moshe Rabbeinu is on a much higher level. The other Nevi'im were never given Dinim L'Doris. They were never given Torah Mitzvahs. They were given Hayru Ashur. Nevuah by definition means Hayru Ashur. Moshe Rabbeinu was the only one who was given Torah. So Rav Soloveitchik quoted the name of Rav Kook in his Siddur. He writes, he thinks that that's the Pashab Shad Zohar. You should remember the Chet Mir. You should remember this Iker and Amunah, that Nevuas Moshe Rabbeinu is on a much higher level than that of the other prophets. That only Moshe Rabbeinu was given Torah. So we should have on Shabbos, when we hear the Kriyas HaTorah, we should have in mind to be yotzei these two mitzvahs, two zechiras.
When you mentioned that when the king writes a sefer Torah, does he write the whole Chumash Torah, sefer Torah?
Some say that he only writes Mishnah Torah as a kitzur, but the Pashim Shani Mori writes two separate Torah. Mishnah Torah means an abridged Torah. It's not the exact.
You got Mars?
Yeah, I didn't.